Welcome to the History Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Thomason. The History Podcast is an educational podcast intended to engage student and lifelong learning in American history. Without further delay, let's get to it. Welcome to the podcast. I'd like to start today's episode with a question for you. Have you ever thought about what strikes fear in you? For some, it's spiders. For others, it may be snakes. And for some, it may be being stranded in deep waters or stuck in close proximity with others. Maybe it's even clowns. For me, and I don't know, maybe you can relate, it's the unknown. It's the deafening silence of the things you can't see. This reminds me, quite frankly, of what we're going to be taking a deep dive into today, and that is the first English colony attempted in North America, the lost colony of Roanoke Island. But first, let's get a better understanding of English colonization in the 17th century. When we look back at the age of imperialism, England really got a late start in this race. They're way behind everybody else, the Spanish, the Portuguese, the French, the Dutch. The English don't even establish their first successful colonial venture until 1607 with Jamestown. That's more than 100 years behind the Spanish. The question we need to first address is why. There's several answers to this, so let's just quickly just kind of to lay the groundwork for the topic of our discussion today. Let's look at why England was so far behind in this race to the Americas. First, England had a lot of internal problems between Protestants and Catholics. Henry VIII, who was the King of England, you may remember from your history classes, had many wives and participated in a lot of beheadings in his days. He was a Protestant. And eventually, he is going to officially break away from the Catholic Church, forming the Church of England, also known as the Anglican Church. As you should also recall, Henry VIII had two daughters, Elizabeth, who was a Protestant, and Mary, who was a Catholic. And for a while, Mary held the crown until Elizabeth dethrones her, causing a lot of division within the country, which naturally is going to make foreign matters challenging when you have problems at large, or as large as this, at home. Another reason why the English were so far behind in the Americas was because of the civil conflict they were going through with the Irish. The Irish wanted to be a sovereign state and wanted to establish their own form of government, but the English had other ideas. They viewed the Irish as inferior, barbaric people who were religiously and intellectually far behind the English. And so the British will use their strength as a military to forcefully go in and subdue the Irish very brutally, burning their villages, even decapitating heads of Irishmen and lining them along the streets of town. I mean, this is very, very brutal stuff. To add to the problems, the British crown is going through an economic depression, and therefore the crown doesn't have a lot of money to spend. And because of the depression, there is high unemployment, low wages, high crime, lots of poverty. And there are many affluent, which is a small percentage, you know, depending on which reports you look at, anywhere from 2 to 5% of the country, believed that there were too many people in the country, in particular the poor. This makes it difficult for the crown to sponsor expeditions to the Americas. However, they will find ways to garner some of the riches out of the New World by giving privateers, a topic we may venture into in future episodes. These are ship captains who are licensed to plunder Spanish ships. They're pirates, essentially, And they're sent out to plunder these Spanish ships who were returning from the Americas with all sorts of goods. One of the most famous privateers or pirates is Sir Francis Drake, who you could argue is one of the most notorious pirates of this era. In fact, you should read some of the Spanish literature describing Sir Francis Drake. They, without a doubt, classify him as a pirate. Now, if you talk to British people, they will not think that he is a pirate. They will call him a privateer or a ship captain, but they will not refer to him as a pirate. It all goes to what your paradigm is. So how did the tide turn for England? I mean, you've got all sorts of internal division. You've got civil conflict with the Irish. You've got economic depression. How did the tide turn for England, and what led them to get involved? Well, first, the country will eventually resolve the internal religious issues in England by consolidating the country under the Church of England. And this will give the crown the ability to use religious animosity towards the Catholics as a tool to use against the Spanish, who is one of their arch rivals, the arguably at this time, the largest power in the world. And the Spanish are a Catholic nation. This, combined with the fear of being left behind economically by not only the Spanish, which are a Catholic nation, but also the French, who have a pretty high percentage of Catholicism in their nation. This led them to wanting to get involved drastically and without delay. They had to move. You had the French in the northeastern region near the Hudson River. The Dutch are up there as well. They have, you know, relatively good relationships, especially the French, with the native tribes up there, the Algonquin-speaking nations up there. But the crown will create the Joint Stock Company eventually. And this will allow for people to invest money into these ventures, allowing the risks and the rewards to be spread out among the investors. This would allow people seeking wealth to go out on these ventures to try and make money for their investors. It gives them a lot of incentive. England will then issue joint charters to people seeking wealth in the New World. These are people who don't make a lot of money currently, who are willing to take risks to gain any kind of wealth, to change their life. Two that are very familiar to those of us in the United States are the Virginia Company, which we'll talk about in future episodes, and also the East India Company, which will famously supply the tea that colonists threw in the Boston Harbor. The Virginia Company is named after Queen Elizabeth, who was said that because she was never married, that many believe that she was the Virgin Queen of England, hence the name Virginia. If you weren't part of the gentry or the aristocracy in England, there was a very good chance you were living in poverty during this period. It is widely believed that roughly 95% of the English population at this time was outside of those two classes. And as the economic depression continued to worsen and people began stealing food to survive, the crime rates are skyrocketing. This is going to cause members of Parliament to start to believe that there's just too many mouths to feed in this country, which is statistically, as we know, inaccurate. But nonetheless, fear causes Parliament to believe the best solution was to get rid of as many poor people in the country as they could, and that includes the criminals and the marginalized in societies, and send them on these ventures to the Americas. And who knows, maybe they will benefit the country on these ventures to the Americas. When you consider how many variables go into establishing a colony, which many of these variables are out of your control, the challenges these men and women face seem utterly hopeless. And in the late 1570s, Humphrey Gilbert, Sir Humphrey Gilbert, thinks it may be possible to make your way to the West Indies by going through what he believes is a waterway, what we know historically to be the Northwest Passage. And he convinces his half-brother, Sir Walter Raleigh, that this is a possibility. Now, at this time, Raleigh was currently the love interest of Queen Elizabeth. And he hopes that this connection to her will allow him to get the charter to go to the Americas. The hopeful destination is Roanoke Island, which is in modern-day North Carolina, but at the time was considered a part of Virginia colony. If they can establish a presence there, there will not only be access for the English to the Americas, but they will also have the ability to potentially capture and steal goods from Spanish ships returning from their ventures in the Americas. So Sir Humphrey Gilbert will set out to sea, but he dies, and he doesn't get this opportunity. And his half-brother, Sir Walter Raleigh, will have to pick up his contract in 1578. But there's a stipulation in the contract that really presses Raleigh for time. In the contract, he must establish a colony by 1584. So you do the math. He has 6 years to establish a colony in the Americas. So he assembles a team with ship captains and soldiers and artisans, John White being one of them. He also brings aboard cartographers, and they map out their expedition. But there's a problem for Raleigh, because Queen Elizabeth was in love with him and did not want Raleigh to see the same fate that his half-brother did on the open seas. So she tells him she will grant the charter, but he cannot go. So the men will have to go on their own without Raleigh, this time being led by John White. When they arrive in the barrier islands of North Carolina, they eventually settle and come to shore at Roanoke Island. There are, at this time, native Tidewater peoples there who spoke the Algonquin language and based on historical research, likely were from the tribes of the Sikitan and the Croatoan tribes living in longhouses there in and around Roanoke Island. And at first, the English and the natives got along pretty well. They traded skins and food and tobacco and other items. And in fact, when the English return home, they give a great report and say, you know what, we've got to go back with people, a specific kind of people, sailors and soldiers and more artisans, people who can mine for gold so that we can make money for our investors over there. And ultimately, this will benefit the crown. During this second mission, the voyagers are left to stay on the island over the winter. As one might expect, they don't get as rich as they thought they would. And as the weather gets colder and colder and the food supply begins to decrease while they're waiting on reinforcements, hostilities begin to build between the natives and the English soldiers. And many of these English soldiers fought the Irish. Remember what we talked about earlier in the episode? So these are very brutal men. These are hard-edged men. And the English begin stealing food from the Sikitan and the Croatoan. And they even accuse the natives. This is where the story gets a little crazy. They even accuse the natives of stealing a silver cup from their camp. And they demand that the natives give this cup back, this silver cup. And the natives are like, we don't know what you're talking about. And they end up murdering several Sikitan and Croatoan natives. Eventually, the supply ships with reinforcements arrive, led by Sir Francis Drake, who we mentioned earlier. And a bunch of these men who were left over the winter, they just say, "We're getting the heck out of here. We don't want to be here. This is miserable. Take us back to England." And so after Drake drops off the supplies, a lot of these men hop back on the ship and go back with Drake. This forces Sir Walter Raleigh and John White to kind of re-strategize. And they decide that it's in the best interest of their investors to move away from sending soldiers because, you know, they're a little bit rough around the edges. You know, it doesn't take much to get them ready to fight. And they believe that in order to establish a settlement, as opposed to a colony, a settlement, it would probably be best to send civilians. Many of these civilians are, you know, destitute, poor, willing to work. So they will send 116 civilians on another expedition to the Americas. This time, however, they were hoping to go north of Roanoke to the Chesapeake Bay. And if you're looking at a map, you can see where Chesapeake Bay is. It's just to the north. But as we mentioned just a minute ago, a lot of the variables are out of your control, the biggest of which is weather. And the weather forced them to make landfall right back at Roanoke Island. And upon their arrival, one of the English colonists is almost immediately murdered by one of the natives, likely a Sikitan, because of fear over the ensuing food shortage that would come when the winter ultimately drove the food supply down. In 1588, John White, who by this point is the governor of Roanoke Island, decides to sail back to England, leaving his friends and even his own family behind in order to ask the crown for more ships to help firmly establish the settlement. However, there's a problem. You see, the Spanish Armada is preventing English ships from passing through, so they're hung up fighting the Spanish. And after the Armada is finally defeated, White will be able to send ships to Roanoke Island. The only problem is he won't be able to return to the island until 1590. So for 2 years, his friends, his comrades, and his family are left on Roanoke Island to fend for themselves, likely. When John White returns to Roanoke Island, he finds no trace of life there. Imagine how creepy that is. You're walking around and you see no trace of life. You see some of the camps been torn down, some of it still intact. You don't see the small boats that were left behind. And the only real piece of evidence that you see that might tell you what happened to the colonists there, to your friends and your families and your comrades, is a tree that has carved in it Croatoan. Creepy, right? So what happened to the colonists at Roanoke? This is one of the great mysteries in colonial American history, and you could even argue in all of American history. Years later, after Jamestown is settled in 1607, the colonists there made a serious effort to find out what happened to the colonists at Roanoke. Natives told them stories of white-skinned people with houses of stone living with other tribes. George Perry, who was one of the Jamestown settlers, even led a search party and reported back that he saw a native boy who was about 10 years old and had blonde hair and lighter skin. Now, while no one actually knows what happened, Through the years, historians have found written sources and archaeological records that do provide us with enough information to at least formulate some hypotheses. One of my favorite historians on this subject is John K. Davis, who proposes five different theories. Here they are. The first theory is that the colonists were killed by the Spanish. He adds that documents found in Spanish archives indicate that the Spanish were aware of and even knew the location of the Roanoke colony, but there is no evidence that an attempt was made to attack it. This leads more credence to the second theory, and that is that they were possibly killed in a native massacre. This is the story of Powhatan. The chieftain and father of Pocahontas told the Jamestown leader John Smith that the Roanoke colonists had gone to live in the Chesapeake area with the Chesapeake tribe there in what is nearby Virginia Beach. And during an attack on this tribe by Powhatan's confederation, all the colonists were killed except for four, two boys and one young maid. So as proof, Powhatan showed a musket barrel and a brass mortar and certain pieces of iron which had been theirs. So there's that. The third theory is that the colonists attempted a return to England and were lost at sea. This one's highly unlikely, though, Davis says, because the boats left behind were small and were unsuitable for ocean travel. And even if an attempt was made, the boats could have only held a small number, and the majority of the settlers would have still been left behind. So what happens to the other people on the island? It still doesn't answer the question of what happened to the settlers, the colonists, on Roanoke Island. Davis's fourth theory is that the colonists all died as a result of disease or famine. Neither of these is beyond the realm of possibility, although it has been reasonably argued that neither, in all likelihood, would have destroyed the entire colony. That leads us to the fifth theory. And this fifth theory is the most popular theory in modern day. It is that the colonists were dispersed and were assimilated into various native tribes. And the reason this is the most popular theory is because of the reports that we have from early Jamestown settlers like George Perry, which lead people to believe that this could have been a reasonable likelihood. In fact, in 1959, a panel of scholars, including the late British historian David Beers Quinn, considered by many to be the expert authority on Roanoke Island, concluded that the colonists most likely went to the Chesapeake area. But still others believe the Croatoan story. And this is one of the fascinating things about history. This is what I love about history. There are stories like this that are laced into the fabric of our story, where there's no definitive answer on what happened, but it causes us to reflect on the challenges faced by both the colonists and also the impact that it had on the native people groups, specifically in this case, the Tsikitan and the Croatoan. So what do you think? We would love to hear what your theory is. And again, that's the beauty of history. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the History Podcast. We would like your feedback, good or bad, so that we can better serve our audience. If you have a question you would like for us to answer in a future podcast or have a topic request, leave that as well. If you haven't already subscribed to the History Podcast, go ahead and do that now so that you'll get notified when new episodes come out. You can find the History Podcast on any of your podcast streaming platforms. The History Podcast is an Anchor FM production.